You're listening to The Chapman Cast, a podcast about religion and life.
Welcome to The Chapman Cast. My name is Pierce, and today I'm joined by my friends Todd and Calvin. I'm doing pretty well today. It's ugly out, but I'm here to talk about some interesting, fun things, and I love recording The Chapman Cast, so I am in another great mood. How are you doing, Calvin?
I'm doing well. I feel like I'm on the home stretch for theological school and just handed in my dissertation, so I have an uplifting and light feeling.
That is wonderful. Todd, how are you?
Doing great. Just had a cheesesteak for lunch with yourself and Solomon, and so it was a good way to get this day moving.
Today we're going to be talking about, in marriages and other relationships, whether or not we have room to grow. Todd, why don't you tell us more about what you mean by that question?
Well, growing up, we had a lot of humor and banter in the household. It was all in good fun. But it was interesting to note that sometimes you didn't do certain things because you thought you were going to get chastised for it, in fun, but nevertheless, it did contain your movement. As we grew up, my younger brother, he burst out of his shell as he left school, and he would do things that I would have never thought him capable of doing. Things that I thought, wow, I wish I could did that too. That was a great idea. Later in life, I got married, and I found a similar kind of thing happening where my wife assumed I would act certain ways and I would act according to the assumption, not necessarily what I wanted to be like. And as I got longer and longer in the relationship, I noticed that there were more and more things that I kind of wanted to do that my wife would actually like for me to do, but I didn't because it was in conflict with her perception of me. So what I wanted to talk about today was creating room to grow in our relationships. How can we avoid typecasting others and being typecast as being a certain way so that when somebody wants to do something different with their life, the freedom is there to do so?
That reminds me of this great book that a lot of people have recommended to me, and I finally read, called Black Sheep and Kissing Cousins. And it's about the stories we tell about our relationships, and especially about our children, or that our parents tell about us to us. Like, oh, well, you were always stubborn as a child. Or, well, you're the smart one. Or, you're the athletic one. And so that becomes your identity. Even if you may not be smart, now you think you are, and so you work better at school, and so you become more intelligent. Or if a kid knows that they just can't spell, and I remember this was my thing. In fourth grade, I had convinced myself I couldn't spell. And so fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I was in the special spelling education program. I remember getting into seventh grade, and Mr. Irwin, the seventh grade teacher, took me aside and said, Pierce, you can spell. You're not going to be in the special spelling program anymore. I don't care what you think. You can spell. And suddenly I could. It was amazing because he gave me the space to be able to be a decent speller. And so now I don't think about it anymore. But I know there are other stories that I believe from my childhood. And being newly married, I bet there are stories that my wife believes because she knew the 30-year-old Pierce. When I turn 40, many years from now, am I going to have the permission to be the 40-year-old Pierce?
Clearly, I hope that you do have that ability to be 40-year-old Pierce. I'm feeling likewise that I hope I have the ability to move forward. One of the activities or events that got me into this subject was about a year and a half ago, I guess, I went to the Maple Camp, which is a summer camp for teens up in Canada. And Calvin was there with me. And it was amazing how much fun I had and how much self-discovery I felt I had when the object of the camp was self-discovery for the teens. And I came away from that going, wow, I need some changes in my life. And I figured if I said some of the things that I wanted to do, my wife would be like, your earlier teacher was, no, Todd, you don't do that. That's not you. So it started an open conversation saying, hey, I'd like to do some things, but I need you to support me in doing them.
Todd, thanks for bringing up Maple. I remember that camp. I can truly admit that I'm guilty of what I call pigeonholing. I remember seeing some of those kids and immediately having a, this is the way they must be, this is the way they look to me, and I pigeonholed them. But at that camp, I was wrong in every case. The kids were so different, so varied, so deep, and it helped me with that judgment.
So the question I have is for myself, you guys, and our listeners, when we move forward in our lives, how do we prevent from doing that? How do we not only prevent from doing it in the future, but how do we break the cycle so that when you want to grow or someone near you wants to grow, that space is there?
I think bringing the Lord's perspective in always helps and thinking about what His vision of my future looks like. I look at myself and I think, well, I procrastinate. I'm really hypercritical. I'm a perfectionist. All these things that I don't think are very good about me. And that's just who I am. Thank you very much. Not going to change. But that's not what the Lord sees. The Lord sees me in heaven. And it's not just that the Lord thinks I can change. The Lord literally has a plan for me to be in heaven and isn't pigeonholing me as any one particular thing. If I can remember that about myself, hopefully I can also remember it about others. But I don't know how to go about asking others to not pigeonhole me, to give me space to grow. Because it sounds kind of selfish, like, oh, give me space to grow. I don't know how to bring that up with others.
Thanks, Pierce. I know what you mean about that. Well, I did the same thing to Maggie. I pigeonholed her. She's a security queen. She loves her security. I decided that we were going to go on a big trip, and I didn't tell her where. I scheduled it and everything, and we both went and really enjoyed it. So I was wrong about her ability to be flexible. And I look at the disciples, at times they must have just said, this guy's a carpenter. What is this going on here? So in terms of pigeonholing, my biggest pigeonholer is myself. I don't believe I can do things, so I don't do them. One of the things I've been, and Maggie's been helping me with, is to tell me I can do this, and then maybe I can.
Yeah, it sounds like the people that you surround yourself with make a huge difference. I know that if I spend time with people who don't believe I can do something, it makes it really hard to do. And I think about your brother. He's got this great background, but now he can do all these different things. And I remember myself moving down to D.C., away from Bernathan, away from my family. Nobody knew me down there. So I thought, I can be an outgoing person. I could work for this. I could work for that. I could just call people up and ask for meetings. And I could, because nobody was there to tell me I couldn't. It was an amazing fresh start. But now that I'm married, I can't just walk away and start fresh. That's just not an option. I'm taking Taryn with me. So it's not something that I can just ever start over with. So I think your question about how to deal with this in a marriage relationship is really important.
The key to me is realizing that people want to change. They don't want to be who they are. They want to be better. It suddenly gives you the opportunity to see that they are trying to grow. If you can encourage that and see the subtle hints of the growth, and like a sprouting plant, you water it instead of stomping on it, perhaps you'll get a flower out of it. That's what I see in the marriage relationship, is watching for it and realizing that, you know, this person, they're just like me. They're trying to grow in different areas, but they too want to grow. And so that when I'm seeing it, I go out and nurture it.
Something I read while studying some of my own problems was that when talking about something that you can't do, remember to be technically accurate. For example, let's say I don't like onions. Well, that's not technically true. What's technically true is that in the past, I have not liked onions. I can't predict the future. In the past, I have not liked onions. In the past, I have lied. Or in the past, I have done these bad things. That doesn't make me an irredeemable sinner. That makes me someone who has sinned. That difference helps me remember that about anybody. Technically, in the past, my wife was like X. And that doesn't mean that that's what she is today.
I like that. And to me, it also reminds that open communication is needed, because while you want to assume the best out of your spouse, and I want to nurture any growth opportunities I see, it's amazing what an open conversation will do to push that reset button, because you're right. You and Taryn are stuck with each other. Sometimes, though, you're going to want to push that reset button and say, okay, we need to clear our past baggage away and be able to say, okay, where do we want to go from here? How do we get there from here?
Todd, I'm with you on that. When I have shared where I want to be 5 years from now with Maggie, just sharing it has made a huge difference. It's made it so she can look at me in a different light and say, that's not who I thought you were, but if that's where you want to be, I can support that.
I think that open conversation can be hard. With me, if I tell someone where I want to be 5 years from now, part of it is implying that something that I am doing now, I don't like. So I have to admit to someone outside of myself that I have a failing or a weakness. I hate admitting to my wife that I have a weakness. I think that makes me look weak, but also less attractive. I think that makes me less of the man. So what do I do with that?
Well, it's true. You're plenty unattractive as it is. So why add to that? I agree. But what I do think is, I think it was John and Lori Odener who started this saying in my head of build up barriers with other people and break them down with your spouse. Sorry, John and Lori, if I quoted you wrong, but the idea of breaking down barriers with your spouse really does ring well to me. I feel like the reason why we don't grow is because we don't feel safe with it. We have this spot, this territory, we've built up some walls around it, we own this piece of land, and to step outside of it isn't safe. We know what our spouse thinks of us right now, at least we think we do. If we move out of it, is the spouse or other person going to change their view of us if we move out of it? And while you might not be as happy as you could be if you moved out of it, you also know where you are. You're not worse off. So we build up barriers to protect the land that we have. And it takes a lot to climb out of that. I think you're right. It is hard to have open conversation because you're putting your safety on the line. But isn't that what we have to do to grow? All the stories in the Bible about change, they involve pain.
Yeah, I think a key with this is remembering whose land it is that we staked out. We're claiming this is my ground. These are my good things. And recognizing that the children of Israel were given the land, and it was on loan. It was the Lord's land of Canaan. It was the Lord's kingdom. It's the Lord's good, not mine. So anything that I happen to have good that I think I'm awesome in front of my wife, anything remotely positive, it's because somebody gave it to me, because the Lord gave it to me. And if I can remember that all the good things I have were given to me, then I don't have to be as prideful about risking them. Because I can't risk what the Lord's given me. They're good. And if they really are good, they'll be good after I change. They'll continue to be good forever because they're eternally wonderful things from the Lord. And I think that's some of what faith is about. I think faith is not just believing in a God, but trusting in a God. Trusting that the good things he's given you, including the ability to change, is for a good end. And that if you're willing to let go of some of your own control things or fear, he will help you. He's going to help you with the people that he's put into your life, your wives, your siblings, your family. But you have to be willing to accept his help through them. Well, on that thought, hope you enjoyed listening in on our conversation. Thank you for joining us on another episode of the Chapman Cast.
Content on the Chapman Cast is owned by its hosts and interview guests. Find us online at newchurchperspective.com/ChapmanCast. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a positive review on iTunes and tell your friends. We welcome your feedback in the comments section of the website. Thank you for listening.